Welcome to the Everyday PM podcast, the podcast where we discuss project management principles for your everyday life. My name is Ann Campia, and I'm a certified project slash program manager with a lot of experience working across different industries, including healthcare, retail, tech, consumer goods, and now marketing. I am so excited to welcome Donna Gregorio, who is a veteran of corporate IT project management, a published author, college grad school instructor, and well-respected conference speaker. Now, Donna, I've had a chance to see you speak in person now, so I'm so excited now to welcome you back onto the podcast to introduce you to maybe some new members of our audience. So Donna, for those who have not met you yet, and before we introduce our topic for this episode, why don't you take a brief moment to introduce yourself to our audience?
Well, thanks, Anne. It's great to be back again on the podcast. I do love everything you're trying to accomplish with it, focused on project management and advancing the careers of many of us and many of you in the audience listening today. Really respect what Anne's doing, so kudos to her. As Anne said, I am a veteran IT project manager, recently published a book 2 years ago called The Successful Project Manager, and have been presenting and discussing some of the experiences from the book, but also in other areas. I'm currently managing the PMO office in my company's IT organization. So I work for the MITRE Corporation in Bedford, Massachusetts, where we support the federal government in many engineering applications. I started out there as a software developer and migrated to more design engineer, both user interface design and software design, and then gradually moved into project management and haven't really looked back for the past, I'd say, 15 or so years. So with my department head role, I'm responsible, as I said, for the PMO and the systems analyst, systems engineers, and we support the most important projects in our IT organization. We manage about $110 million budget, lots of things going on in many different technology areas.
Yeah, amazing. And by the way, you know, Donna, you've been on the podcast for, I think, multiple episodes now. So thank you for your willingness to come back on and share your knowledge with our audience. And you talk about the years of experience you've had in that space. You had a really good episode with us where you walked us through prioritizing or even how to create roadmaps for your organization. I think that's such a killer topic for those that are kind of looking for the next level of what it means to be a project manager and how do you grow and mature in your role. So definitely give that one a listen. And I was fortunate enough to get into one of your panels that you had at our PMI Global Conference this last year. We met in person. I got to see you present that topic live in front of a packed house. So I'm just, again, very, very excited that we're able to connect in this way on this platform and share such amazing and eclectic topics that you have brought forth to me to say, hey, I think your audience is going to take a liking to this. So leading into the topic for our episode, I myself have been contemplating this, and it's weird that maybe we have this synergy now that we've met, Donna, but you brought this topic to me and I said, yes, that topic is exactly what's top of my mind in terms of how do you leave a legacy in this space, right? There's project managers who kind of grind day to day, then you kind of move to different levels of PM and eventually, hopefully, to a leadership position in your organization. But I've been thinking about this myself in terms of legacy and what that really means for this industry. And maybe some people have different definitions of it. But for you, and for our topic, leaving a legacy for you means writing your book, right? And you mentioned it in your introduction, The Successful Project Manager. And so today we're going to focus on leaving a legacy. And in doing so, you wrote a book. I'm curious to see if maybe I need to write a book, but we're all curious about kind of what is that the pinnacle of our careers that will say, hey, like I left a legacy, and especially in this industry and project management. So Donna, that is our topic for today. I know that you've introduced yourself to our audience, but tell us a little bit more about what led to even this thought about writing this book.
Yeah. So Anne, it's a great topic, and thanks for letting me speak about it. I do think it's different than a lot of the things that we typically talk about at project management conferences. This is a nonfiction book. It is tech-driven. It's not a memoir. It's not a collection of stories. It's not a fiction book, although I think a lot of the guidance or recommendations that I have would apply in any of those cases. But I decided after working in the industry for so many years that I had some specific skills or techniques that I use on every project that I work on, and that I should share those with others. I've seen many challenges, as I know your audience has also seen many challenges in project management over the years. And how do we address those as projects become more and more complex, as many of us have to manage multiple projects at the same time that may or may not be related, portfolios of projects? And how do we try to avoid those challenges as they come up and address those things with tools that we know and love, things like schedules, things like risk registers that we've learned about over the years, but maybe we don't apply them as appropriately as we should, or as strict about applying those things. So I decided to write a book to document some of those challenges and the solutions that I came up with to address those challenges. And in some cases, I'm telling stories about projects that we got involved in where we really did run into a problem. And if we had had better foresight, or if we had had a better plan in place, that maybe we would have avoided those challenges. So I think storytelling is a great way to convey what you're trying to accomplish. And I think that the goal of my book is to talk about project management and being irreplaceable, not irrelevant. That's really the tagline for my book. And that means driving project success and being committed and being that single person that's responsible and not just sitting back and waiting for others to do your job for you, and not just assuming that everyone else will get the job done. Really being that single point of contact and being the one that's responsible. So that really was the way that I expect my project managers to execute. And that's the guidance I give my project managers. And I thought, why not put that in a book and leave that legacy for others so that others can learn from my experiences? And really, you think about writing a book, you have a problem and you solved it. Mm-hmm. And so now it's time to tell everyone how you solved it so that they can hopefully follow in your footsteps, and also so that you can achieve the recognition that you deserve for that hard-earned experience that you've had. Many of us work for many years, and really at the end of our careers, maybe we don't really have anything to show for it. And this is, in my case, a legacy that I feel is something that I really have something to show for after all these years of working in project management. And many of you might say, well, there's so many project management books out there. How is yours any different, right?
Yeah.
I think that was a question that I had when I started to write the book, and how am I differentiating myself as compared to other project management books. I haven't read them all. Obviously, there's so many, it would be impossible to read them all. But I am a college professor, teach project management at the graduate level. And I have seen the textbooks that I'm instructed to use or advised to use by the university. And they're very dry, very boring, very tool specific. You need to know how to use Microsoft Project. You need to know how to put a schedule together. You need to know how to run a test plan, these kinds of things. But again, the real life story is when my students' eyes really opened up. And when I told them, well, guess what happened to me today? And I tell them a story. And that's when they would say, oh my God, why did that happen? What did you do? How did you fix it? And what were the emotions, right? Grabbing people's emotions.
Yeah. Yeah.
How do you feel when your project gets canceled and you've got 10 people working on your project? You have to tell them that project got canceled. How do you feel about that? Put yourself in my shoes when that happened to me. So those are the stories. Those are the things I think that really grab people and make my book a little bit different, I think, than some of the other project management books.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And you know, you're right. Nobody is running to and no offense to PMI, but nobody is running to read the PMBOK when they have a problem. Like, let's be real. Okay. So nobody's like on a project. Oh no, something's derailed. Let me go into my PMBOK and figure out, you know, what to do here. The practical examples you present in your book, it's as if when you read Donna's book, it's as if Donna is speaking to you, right? And it's really cool because you get this feeling like somebody's telling you, hey, I've been there. This has happened to me. This is how I navigated it. Take that guidance and make it your own, right? And so that's to your point, Donna, and to further emphasize how your book is unique from some of the others that we typically read as we go on our PM journey. Donna's book is something that you can pick up and say, hey, like, I think she's talked about going through something similar in this book. So let me see how they were able to figure that out, right? And problem solve. That's the beauty of what we do, right? Is that we best practices, it's the sharing of the knowledge. It's having somebody stumble so that you don't have to the next go around. And Donna does that, and she does that successfully in her book. And I just got this like deja vu of our first podcast episode together, speaking about your book. So I do want to make sure I shout out that podcast episode, because it was great to hear you kind of just talk through all of the challenges that even writing the book presented, right? Going through the exercise itself as if it was your own project that you had to execute against. So now bringing it back to kind of like, we're using a strong word with the topic of this episode when we talk about legacy. So I want to make sure that the audience understands what we mean by legacy. So to you, Donna, why do you feel that legacy is important and in this situation when it comes to writing your book?
Well, I have a phrase that I like to say about a legacy, and you're really planting a seed in a garden that you may never see grow. So here's a situation where someone takes a look at my book or your book, and they go, and you don't know them. And they go off and they read your book, and they gain some knowledge from that, and perhaps they execute on some of the recommendations that you have. How great is that? Now there's a garden that you never see grow. Not to mention that when you're retired and moving on to a different career, you are different things you want to do. You still have left that legacy for those who are behind you, still working as a PM or whatever it might be that you want to write your book about. Maybe you're very good at woodworking and you're interested in writing a book about that. Or maybe you have another hobby, music, that you want to write a book about, or some other great hobby that you found that you're really good at and you have a specific skill or technique that you would like to describe. Maybe a more current view of things that maybe others haven't seen. Or maybe it's just your own unique approach to tackling a situation, whatever it might be. I think that seed that's in the garden is really what your legacy is, not only for this generation, for the generations to come. Mm-hmm. So I think we have a lot that's holding us back. We often don't have the confidence in ourselves to take the time. We think it will take a lot of time, and it does. I like to say that writing a book for me, it's like having another degree. It takes about the same amount of time as it would for you to get an advanced degree. I know Anne and I were just talking about her looking into getting a PhD and working on that. That's a 3-year project in her case. In this case, it took me about a year to write, and it took me about 6 months or more to get it published. Because I had to get the book approved through my company, even though I don't really mention MITRE, which is the company I work for. I don't really mention MITRE in the book much, but my boss said, if anyone looked you up on LinkedIn, they would know where you work.
And they know where they'll put it together. From. Right.
So we definitely need to make sure that we as a company agree with there's some of the statements that you're making. So I had, that was the longest, that review process took a long time to get through that hoop. But in general, it took, as I said, I think overall it took me about a year and a half, but was during COVID. So there wasn't a lot else going on in my life. So I didn't have time to focus on it. So if you think, well, maybe if I tried to do it again, and it was not COVID, maybe it would take me twice as long. So again, 3 years to write a book, 3 years to get a degree. I think it was cheaper than it will be for you to get a degree.
That is very true.
Right. But overall, I think the experience is similar. You're really focusing your energy on making sure you know as much as possible about the topic, right? What you would do if you were to get an advanced degree as well. And you're really being very meticulous about how you describe that. And a lot of people say, and I think it's true, if you really want to be an expert in a topic, then you should teach it to someone. And effectively, that's what you're trying to do by writing a book.
I'm curious, Donna, like, what was the first thing you wrote down? Like, did you already have it in your head? I'm going to outline the book in this structure, because your book is very, you know, it's structured in such a way that makes sense, right? Like, you're reading it and you're like, oh, it's practical. And so there's, to your credit, it is very well structured in a way that I can absorb it and then go then and apply it. Right. So was that the first thing that came up in your head, or what was like the actual first thing that you wrote down? Okay. So what was like the first thing, that topic that you honed in on, and then the book kind of expanded from there?
Yeah. I mean, I think the first thing I needed to do was come up with my positioning for the book. And that means, what is the point? What am I trying? What is the key message I'm trying to get across with the book? And I've read a lot of nonfiction books, and most of them have that one message that they're really trying to get across. And so I needed to have that one message. And again, I said it earlier, and I'll say it again. The real message is, as a PM, make sure you're irreplaceable and not irrelevant. And I think I've seen project managers become irrelevant because of what they're asked to do. Specifically, I give an example of a group of project managers that I knew about that did status reports. That's all they did, was they organized weekly review meetings and made sure that people on the team were accountable. And they ran reports and they said, here's where we are, the red, yellow, green, here's the status, here's the financials. Yeah. But they didn't advance the project. They didn't work with the team to advance the execution. They weren't getting the hands dirty in testing. They weren't presenting and giving roadshow presentations on the material. They weren't working with stakeholders to ensure that the execution was correct. It was just status report after status report. And in the end, they got fired from the job because there was a budget cut, and they felt they weren't needed enough.
Yeah.
They weren't making enough of an impact. And so the stories were really the things that I wrote down first. So coming up with the stories, and then coming up with a key point that I'm trying to make was really the first thing to do. And why am I writing a book? What is my purpose for writing a book? I want to elevate my status and in terms of my expertise, but I also want to share my expertise with my readers. And who's my audience? So I need to figure that out. My audience is both new project managers and experienced project managers. And I try to weave in some beginner stories and some more advanced stories so that I'm addressing both of those audiences. But you do need to come up with that. You need to make sure the book's interesting. I needed to make it relevant and really full of those stories to support my claims. If I had a statement that I was making, then I sure hope that I have a good story to back it up. And also hiring an editor to make sure that in the end it was grammatically correct. So I do think that position, book positioning, and then the drafting of some of those stories, that's when I was able to develop an outline. It took me some time, though, to get to the outline, that planning and the storytelling. I ended up writing about 12 or 15 stories, and I ended up only publishing 8 of those stories. Mm. The rest I didn't think were that interesting, to be honest. Mm-hmm. The 8 I chose, I thought had some points, some really good points to be made. And that all took time. As I said, I think that really where you come up with the main points, because God knows we can all ramble. We can all talk about all of our challenges that we've had, but to be able to succinctly describe them and have an outline that makes sense and a chapter that has a thesis statement. So mm-hmm. each chapter should have a point that you're trying to make, right? Not just rambling, but you should really have a key issue that you're trying to address in each of those chapters. And that's where the outline comes into play.
Got it. Yeah, that absolutely makes sense. And understand your why. I think that's I just want to kind of reiterate that. I think that absolutely makes sense. You don't just write a book with no purpose or no meaning behind it. So I think I'm curious, as you were going through the process, if you ever hit a roadblock that was presenting, you know, a point where you said, like, maybe I'm not going to finish this book. And that could be something very tangible, like the fact that you wrote this during the pandemic, and kind of like the practical piece of like trying to get it published and that sort of thing. Or it could be something much more in your head about, is this something that people are going to want to read? Like, did you ever hit any of those types of roadblocks in the process of writing your book?
Yeah, I hit a lot of roadblocks. And I actually have a friend who's writing a book right now, and she's hit a roadblock, and she kind of put it on the shelf and hasn't gone back to it in about a year. She started writing it in the pandemic too, completely different topic, but she can't seem to get back to it because it's too overwhelming. I think that can be a problem.
Sure.
And when I first drafted my book, I found that my message was not tight enough. I definitely found that I wasn't getting back to the key points at all. And so I started to write, I shifted gears, and I went back to the outline, and I filled out the outline so that I created basically a 6 or 7 page version of my book. Mm-hmm. So each chapter was only like 5 paragraphs long, 6 paragraphs long. And I put in 1 or 2 key diagrams. That's another thing that held me up was I was working on diagramming, and I had too many. Which one's really important? Which ones should I put in? And then I also had this interest in describing. So, you know, if you think about someone who's a PM, maybe who's in construction, right? Doesn't know what agile is, doesn't know what a stakeholder really is, doesn't know a lot of the terms that I think many of the folks in your audience are familiar with, doesn't really know all those key things. I had to explain some of those things.
Right.
So that also sidetracked me. So I had some sidetrack issues. I struggled with the cover design. That took me probably 3 months to come up with a cover design. Mm-hmm. And I went back and forth with the designer that I was working with. I wanted to use a photo. They recommended against using a photo for lots of reasons. I wanted it to be very detailed with lots of things. And they recommended, no, keep it simple. We went back and forth.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of things that, and then my boss had a lot of recommended changes.
Sure.
I'll give you an example. So at one point in the book, I'm trying to hook people in so they're interested in reading. So I'm trying to add some drama to my stories. So I said, these project managers all got fired. And it was because the managers were directing them to only do status reports. And it was the managers that ended up firing them. And so he didn't like the way I was putting down the managers. He said, you sound very negative on management. Okay. And we don't want to give that message. So I had to go back through the whole book and take out and soften. And in the end, it was a great recommendation, but it was a very difficult one to implement. I had to go back through the whole book and change soften the whole thing. So that was another roadblock that I, there's a lot of roadblocks that I hit. Fortunately, I hired a great editor, professional editor, and he helped me format it for Amazon. I did publish through Amazon, and he formatted it for the Kindle for me as well as the paper version. He also has done many book publishing through Amazon, so he knew the process. He helped me find the way to get the ISBN number, which I didn't understand how to do, even though there are really good instructions on how to do that on Amazon. I was a little lost in figuring that out. We spent a whole Sunday together on the phone, walking through the whole Amazon process. Mm-hmm. And we hit a couple of roadblocks there. Formatting was incorrect. So he had to go back and fix it. And then I built my own website, which again can be time consuming and expensive if I did it myself, but others, mm-hmm. if you hired someone to do that, I would imagine that could be a roadblock as well. So, you know, lots of roadblocks leading into actually writing and finishing the book. I had a format for each chapter, but not everyone follows that approach. I had a formula. Maybe other people don't like that formula.
Sure.
That helped me to focus a little bit better. I did all the stories, and then I did all the diagrams, and then I did all of the explanations of terms like stakeholder and agile and things like that. And then I had a checklist at the end of each chapter. I did all the checklists. So I kind of flowed through the book all at the same time. Then I read the whole thing, and there mm-hmm. were pieces of it I didn't like. So I went back and fixed it, and I read it all again. And so again, roadblocks, but there was a process, and I had my own milestones that kept me accountable that said, okay, let's get all the stories done by the end of this month. And then let's get all of the chapters drafted by the end of that month. And then let's get the introduction nailed by the end of this month. And let's get the conclusion drafted and finished by the end of that month. Then let's read through it and do the editing there were steps that I put in place that really helped me to stay accountable, because as PMs, we all know we have to break down a big project into small chunks
absolutely.
That are achievable, right? And we're all really good at that. So I was, I think I applied those techniques to actually writing the book in a way that really helped me to stay on top of my own goal of getting it done.
So you jump through, obviously, all these hurdles, you stumble, you pick things back up, you work with really good people. It sounds like, you know, it takes a village, but also, Donna, you did a lot of it on your own. You finally get the book, the actual hard copy in your hands. How does that feel? And do you feel like at that point you said, okay, this is my legacy. This is how I leave my legacy.
Yeah, it was a little scary, I have to say. So I published this book, and I had two words to say, and it was, now what?
Oh.
Now what?
Of course.
I published the book, and it's like, all right, I this was a big accomplishment, and I'm, you know, proud that I actually completed it. It looks great. I'm so happy. It's terrific. It's a great accomplishment. But I didn't really know what the next steps were. And I'm sure most of your audience would be sitting and saying the same thing. Okay, you published mm-hmm. a book. Now what do you do with mm-hmm. the book? How do you get the word out about the book? How do you get people to recognize that it's of some value? Obviously, people in my inner circle here at work and friends and family and whatnot appreciated and valued it. But to try to get the word out beyond that is much more of a challenge. So I did hire someone who helped me with a marketing plan.
Great.
And she was terrific, really helped me put a media kit together, which I didn't know what that is at the time. I had no idea. But she showed me the outline for it, and I drafted it with her help. So I had that. And then she's the one who recommended that I have what she called a signature talk. And the signature talk is, so you would think it's basically taking your book and putting a presentation together, but the book is very complicated. There's a lot to say in the book, and there's no way you can present the whole book in an hour or even a half an hour. So what kind of a presentation can you put together that pulls out the key pieces from your book or interesting pieces from the book and put that in a presentation. So sure. The topic was what are the three most critical moments in a project that can make or break the project. So mm-hmm. I pulled out three of my favorite stories, and those were the stories that I talked about in that signature talk. Since then, I've come up with lots of other content. I probably have a dozen different topics, including this one, that I'm able to speak at about. And many of those topics, some of them are in the book, but many of them are not. One great example I can give that I've been talking about a lot lately is strategy, roadmaps, and prioritization, mm-hmm. which is not in my book at all. Mm-hmm. But it's something I've been doing recently in my job as a PM. And so I think the book provides that foundation, right, for me to say, this is the topic area that I'm an expert in. And it's not necessarily just the material that's in the book. I don't limit myself to that. And in fact, I think people are more interested in hearing about what I'm working on currently mm-hmm. because it's relevant and it's timely. I'm talking about hybrid work environments, which of course is not in my book. I'm talking about doing more with less money, less funding. Strategy is more important now than it ever was. Innovation, which again, we've been doing innovation for years, but it seems to be a hot topic now.
Sure.
Artificial intelligence, things like that are, again, are not in my book at all. But that foundation of the book provides me that stepping stone and that authority. So when I put in mm-hmm. a proposal for a speaking opportunity, there's more of a chance that I'll get selected because I do have the book and I do have this experience that I'm now developing based on that attending college classes. I've given some guest lectures at college classes and this podcast, which I love to speak on, and then the conference presentations as well. But you know, there's a lot involved. You talk about writing a book and you think it's just the book and that's it. And there's a website that goes with it, and there's speaking engagements and other opportunities if you're a business owner. And you're, let's say you own a bakery and you decide to write a book that has all of your favorite recipes in it. And that's great. And you'll have it, you can sell it in your store. That's terrific. But if you really want other people to hear about it, know about you, then you've got to get it out there somehow. Mm-hmm. And there's so many ways to do that today, whether it be through blogs or YouTube channels or other social media avenues. Absolutely. There's so many ways that you you need to do that. And it's doable, but it takes time and energy and some sort of direction. And that's part of the game. I think if you're writing a memoir about your life, you write it, you publish it, and that's it. You give it to your friends and family and you're done. And maybe you don't really need to get it out to the wider audience. But if you're interested in really leaving that legacy and having others be familiar with you and the work that you've done, then I think what you do after you publish the book is in some ways even more important than actually publishing the book itself.
So what I'm hearing, Donna, is there's a door open for part two of the successful project manager. Perhaps not to put any more pressure on you, to publish another book, but I'm just, think, yes, exactly. It's just, I love that you've left this legacy in the form of this book. And to your point, it's kind of opened the door for so many other engagements, so many other opportunities to showcase your knowledge, to help other project managers get to where they need to be. And you've done that in so many different avenues. And I'm just very, very fortunate for the opportunity to be a part of some of those. And so if you do have an opportunity to see Donna speak, whether it's through a conference or another episode of another podcast, please do so, because I think that the more that you can listen to her, get those examples from her, understand how writing a book really is a way to leave your legacy. And for Donna, I think it's just the beginning of your legacy, to be honest with you. You just have so much knowledge and experience that you continue to share, and you yourself are still working in the space. So you continue to grow your own knowledge. And I know that as you do, you share, you're very sharing, like willing to share everything with everybody. And I think that's one of the most important things about being a project management in our community, is that willingness to speak about best practices, to speak about your failures. And then you can do so by writing a book. So Donna, I think that will do it for you and I in this installment of the Everyday PM podcast. I know if I follow you, I implore everybody else to also follow you. But if folks want to continue the conversation with you, where can they find you online?
Well, I want to say thank you again, Anne. And I also want to say, everyone out there, think seriously about writing your own book, because I think you all have stories to tell and you all have great experiences. And I think I give you all a lot of credit for paying attention to Anne's podcast and give it a try. Where they can reach me on LinkedIn, Donna Gregorio is very easy to find me on LinkedIn, and my website is donnagregorio.com. And thanks again, Anne. Appreciate the time today.
Absolutely. And do also check out Donna's website. She shares a lot of these, even just like templates, and she was talking about diagrams, checklists, all that stuff that's in her book. She shares a lot of that too. So take what you can from the resources that she's willing to share with you, because I think it'll be very helpful for you as a project manager. Feel free to support, or please do support, the Everyday PM podcast. You can find us on every podcasting platform, including Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, Anchor, you name it. Just search for the Everyday PM. While you're there, give us a 5-star review, leave a comment or two about how wonderful Donna is. You can also watch the video version of this episode on my YouTube channel, youtube.com/AnneCampia. While you're there, go ahead and like this video, subscribe to the channel, and click the bell to receive notifications on when new content goes up. Thanks so much for joining Donna and I in this episode of the Everyday PM podcast. And until next time, take care.